Much of the Gyrish garrison panicked and fell back from the sudden attack in their midst. We rallied here, in the commissary hall, in Hangar 4, but our forces are scattered and badly mauled.
What of the Imperial Fists? Asked Tastor impatiently. He had little enough sympathy for human frailties, while every part of his body screamed at him in pain.
There were only a handful here, my lord, said the gunner, looking like she was barely stopping herself trembling. All the bigger gunships went with the assault force, so they had no transport to fall back to. They got a couple of escorts into the air, and they fought for a while, but the cultists shot them down. My lord, your brothers stood and fought when we fled. I fear they were overrun.
Hastur squashed the urge to strike the two soldiers from his path, as the cowards they were. They are but human, he reminded himself. They stand here now, fighting against the foul Xenos. It is better than many of their comrades' actions, no doubt. Where are the enemy? He asked.
Unsure, my lord. Their pursuit was slowed by your brother's efforts. A mob of them caught up to us as Lieutenant Scraith was rallying us here. They picked off the lieutenant, scattered us and broke through to the Medicaid. A few of us managed to stay clear until they'd passed, then set up this gun and barricaded a few offices. We were hoping...
Rally whatever strength you have here and follow me, said Hastur, cutting her off. Given the soldier's report, he didn't expect the Gyrish to be of great help, but more guns, more bodies. Any improvement of the odds was welcome at this stage.
My lord, we are few, she replied.
Hastur fixed her with a fierce stare.
If the foe is left to complete their work here, they will detonate the spaceport's generatorum, he said.
He saw her expression twist at the realization of what that meant. Then, gratifyingly, new steel entered her gaze.
My lord, she said,
then motioned for her ammo carrier to go and fetch reinforcements. Meanwhile, the gunner herself began to fold down the heavy stubber, ready to lug it forward on the advance. As she did so, a flurry of autogun rounds thumped into the sandbags behind which she crouched. One clanged from Hastor's shoulder guard. He looked pointedly at Brother Lasteran, who nodded, then strode straight through the barricade and into the bright sunlight beyond the doorway. His boltstorm gauntlets roared. The autogun fire stopped abruptly. Hastur turned to see a ragged crowd of Gyrish soldiery gathering. He counted nearly 30 in all, emerging like vermin from bolt holes and barricaded strongpoints, and staring at him with a mixture of hope and fear. Most clutched lasguns, a couple flamers. There was one more heavy stubber team. No voxets and no sign of senior officers.
"What is your name?"
Hastur asked the gunner, who had finished stowing her weapon to move it. She looked up at him.
"Corporal Jansis, my lord."
"Corporal Jansis, you are now in command of these soldiers. You will support our advance upon the coolant towers in whatever way you can."
Without waiting for a response, Hastur followed Lasteran through the gap in the barricade and set out onto the ferrocrete expanse of the spaceport. Signs of battle were clear here. Wrecked fuel tenders gouting smoke, bodies scattered across the grey ground where they had fallen. In the distance, he could see one of the landing pads ablaze, and by magnifying his auto-sensors, he picked out skirmishing bands of infantry, both Gyrish and cultist, dotted across the spaceport. The coolant towers rose a quarter mile to the north of his position, the maze of alleyways between them cast into dark shadow by their towering metal mass. The enemy must already be amongst them. Might be moments from completing their sabotage even now. There wasn't time to rally every scattered band of Gyrish soldiery, nor to hunt for any survivors of the Imperial Fist's garrison. And he didn't dare employ his vox in case the foe was listening. This fight required a swift and unexpected strike, to run the enemy through before they could so much as reach for their blades.
Forward, said Hastur, pointing his blade at the coolant towers from which had come the shot that killed Captain Tor some weeks before. We make haste, catch the enemy unprepared, and cut our way through them.
With that, he set off across the open ground, autosensors sweeping for snipers, needles of pain lancing through him with every step. Hastor tasted blood but ignored it. He had a duty to do, and the more he remembered of what had happened to him before, the more he felt the need to atone, rising up within him to eclipse all else. A shotgun boomed, and abruptly the killing weight atop Chaplain Storn was swept away. He wasted no time springing upright, ignoring the pain that stabbed through him as he cast about for his attacker. The gene stealer had been knocked aside, but it was far from dead, already scrambling upright and coming at him again with a ferocious shriek. Storn swung his Crozius, but the effort was sluggish as blood spilled from deep gashes in his forearm. He struck the alien a glancing blow, still enough to shatter its jaws, thanks to the molecular disruption field of his Crozius. But the thing slammed into him all the same, and Storn cursed as a knife-like blade of bone sank through his armour and into his gut. "Hold it up!" yelled a voice from above him. "Hold it up, and I'll finish it!" Storn snarled as he smashed grasping claws aside, felt the blade ripped from his innards to plunge instead into his side. He could feel strength flowing out of him as his blood ran freely, but his spirit was utterly indomitable. Thysis Storn would not die here, ripped apart by Xenos Vermin. He clamped his free hand around the alien's throat, and with a roar, he hefted it into the air. It racked clawed feet at his faceplate and grazed one eye lens, but Storn was unrelenting. He heaved his attacker high. The shotgun boomed again, and Xenos gore showered down on the chaplain for a second time. Wearily, he dropped the corpse to the floor and looked about him for the next attacker. There were none. The gene stealers were all dead, as were the intercessors he had led into the chamber. Above him, First Arbitrator Verrill looked down upon him, ashen-faced, her shotgun still raised against imaginary foes.
"My thanks, First Arbitrator," he said, swaying slightly with pain and blood loss.
Already he could feel his wounds clotting, his Space Marine physiology fighting to keep him combat-ready despite the deep wounds he had taken. He would need an apothecary sooner rather than later, he thought. But for now, he could still fight well enough.
"You are most welcome, Brother Chaplain," she replied, her voice shaking slightly with adrenaline and shock. "Are there any more of those things?"
"I do not believe so," he replied. "I am needed elsewhere, First Arbitrator. Can you manage the evacuation of this chamber?"
"A few who still live," he thought grimly.
"I can," she said. "I've enforcers en route in armoured transport. We'll pull back to the Precinct 774 fortress."
"Do so,"
said Storn, frowning as another priority hail rune flashed in his peripheral vision. He blink-clicked it, and a sudden wash of gunfire and screams assaulted his ear.
"Anyone? Brothers, does anyone hear me?"
Storn instantly recognised the voice. It was Sergeant Furion. Still recuperating from his sore wounding at Delvemine, Furion and his battle brother Ulus had been assigned to stand watch over Hive Spire's environmental control shrine.
"Brother Sergeant, this is Storn. What is your situation?"
The hard bang of a bolt rifle echoed through the Voxlink, followed by the howl of powerful lasers and a whoosh of flame.
"The heretics are here, Brother Chaplain. They came out of the damned walls and hit us hard. Cannot hold them. Storn, they have a weapon, some sort of biocontaminant. They..."
The link cut out suddenly, leaving Chaplain Storn with an icy feeling worming its way up through his guts. A biocontaminant. A weapon. The thought of Mastraka Hive leapt suddenly into his mind. Every living thing annihilated by the biopurge weapon in a matter of minutes.
"Verrill, forget evacuation. Reroute those transports to the Conclave's building's main entrance, and inform the enforcers I will be arriving to take personal command of them directly," he barked,
staunchly ignoring the blood trail he left behind as he made for the head of the helical ramp.
"What about the evacuation?" she asked.
Higher up in the chamber, he heard Lady Tektos raising her voice, calling down for aid.
"There is no time! The heretics have wrong-footed us again!" he spat. "If we do not reach the environmental control shrine in the next few minutes, Angelicus will go the way of Mastraka Hive!"
Behind him, he heard Verrill curse roundly, and then there was a rattle and a clatter. He looked over his shoulder to see the first arbitrator lowering herself over the drop from her platform, using one of her slain comrade's gun straps as an improvised rope. Verrill hissed in pain as her wounded arm was forced to bear her weight, then dropped and hit the mezzanine in a roll. She came to her feet awkwardly and jogged through the carnage, racking her shotgun slide one-handed.
"If that happens, we all die, and I've failed the city and the Emperor both," said the first arbitrator.
"If that happens, we both have," replied Storn,
as the two of them hurried down the ramp to the lower chamber. The stench of blood and the wails of trapped dignitaries chased them from the room. The moment Hastor heard the snarl of engines rise amidst the coolant towers, he knew the element of surprise had been lost. It was not so surprising, he supposed, considering he and his forces had had to approach across open ground. But was it so much to ask that the enemy had been careless and not left a rearguard?
Apparently so, he thought with a grimace,
as light prospector bikes sped from the darkness between the towers, cultists whooping and firing pistols from their saddles.
"Enter them! For the Emperor!"
roared Hastor, and broke into a charge. He felt stitches tear in his flesh as he forced his body to move faster. But what was one more note of pain amidst such a cacophony? A cultist came at him, a crude pipe held in one hand, the other wrapped around his bike's throttle. Domed forehead, blast goggles glinting in the sunlight, worm-form-inscribed bandana wrapped around his mouth and nose, Hastor would have dismissed the man as ganger scum, if it hadn't been for the lengths he had seen these cultists go to in the name of their twisted gods. Pivoting on the ball of one foot, Hastor whipped his blade around, his timing split-second perfect. The sword slashed through the man's pipe, his shoulder and up through his neck. The bike sped on, its headless rider still gripping the throttle and jetting blood until the bike toppled, then crashed and rolled to a stop. Bolt shells and las bolts flashed past Hastor, raking more of the bikers from their steeds. The cult outriders returned fire, knocking several of the gyrish off their feet. At the rear of the desperate charge came a heavier squad bike, a bulky mining laser bolted to its side. The rider whooped as she fired the weapon, her shot punching through one of Hastor's battle brothers and dropping him to his knees with a glowing crater bored through his chest.
"For Primarch and Emperor!"
shouted Hastor, firing his plasma pistol and engulfing the quad bike in a searing blast of superheated energy. The cultist and her mechanical steed turned to ash in a heartbeat, and Hastor limped on through the glowing fragments.
"Easy enough,"
commented Idaras, as they pushed up to the dark mouth of the alleyways. The bulky coolant towers rose like metal trees, tangled with intertwining pipework and clustered together, leaving spaces bare feet across between them.
"They sought to slow us, not beat us," replied Hastor,
before turning to address his motley assemblage of imperial fists and gyrish soldiery.
"Divide up and push for the heart of the complex. You all know where the control shrine is located, yes?"
When no one averred, he pressed on.
"We do not have long. It may already be too late. If they succeed here, the blast will claim us all anyway, so flight is senseless. Do you understand?"
He looked directly at Corporal Janice as he said this, and she answered with a determined nod.
"Forward, then! For the Emperor! Failure is not an option!"
Hastor plunged into the darkness, Idaras and Lasteran close behind him. He kept a map visible in his peripheral vision, his auto-sensors marking the control shrine with a crimson rune. It was maybe 500 yards ahead, amidst the winding maze of towers and pipes, and his limping stride ate up the distance. Hastor turned at an intersection and received a rattling volley of autogun shots from point-blank range. The bullets ricocheted from his armour and faceplate, and the cultist who had fired them charged with a scream of hatred. He aimed a homemade bayonet at Hastor's chest, but the champion backhanded the man from his feet before the blade could connect. His blow bounced the cultist against the flank of a tower and broke his neck. But already another assailant was coming at him, this one a bigger mutant wielding some sort of energized saw. Behind him, Hastor heard Brother Lasteran curse, and an instant later there was a furious explosion. Smoke and shrapnel billowed around Hastor, and he felt fresh pain in his hip as something jagged punched through armour and flesh to lodge in the bone there. Gunfire roared close and deafening between the towers. With no time to turn and look, Hastor swept his blade up and smashed the energy saw aside. It carved deep into a thick pipe, and a jet of steam howled out to engulf the attacking cultist. He choked and reeled back, giving Hastor a moment in which to shoot a glance over his shoulder. Lasteran was down, torn open by the point-blank blast of a mining charge. Idaras stood over his body, bolt rifle hammering, his scarred face bleeding again. Shadowy figures dropped amidst the smoke as the intercessor's shots found them. Hastor spun back in time to see the scalded cultist coming at him again. The energy saw came in, and Hastor whipped his blade up to parry. Searing laspower met blessed adamantine, forged upon the phalanx itself, and sparks exploded. Hastor went to turn his foe's blade and cut low, but a tearing flash of pain in his chest caused him to falter. The cultist's Xenos cursed features twisted in a leer of triumph, and he swung his lasso high for another chopping blow.
"Throw, damned amateur!" spat Hastor, twisting his blade in his grip and ramming it point first into his enemy's throat. "How has scum like you given us so much trouble?"
He ripped the blade free in a spray of Xenos gore, and his enemy staggered away, gurgling to collapse in a heap.
"Lasteran's gone, brother champion," said Idaras,
his former affable insouciance replaced with anger.
"Keep moving, brother," replied Hastor. "If they blow this place into the Emperor's arms, then his sacrifice will be for nothing."
He rounded the intersection and pressed on, following his map. Ahead, he saw a handful of Gyrish charge into a cloud of roiling steam, screamed battle cries on their lips and lasguns flashing. There came a roar of heavy firepower, and the Astra Militarum troopers were cut to bloody chunks. One soldier staggered back out of the steam cloud, blood pouring down her face. She had time to cast a despairing look at Hastor before a shot clipped her head and threw her onto her face.
"For the Emperor!"
Hastor bellowed, breaking into a charge that made his heart's hammer and his joints scream in pain. From ahead, through the steam, he heard a muffled curse and the clatter and rattle that told a tale of frantic attempts to reload. Hastor burst from the haze to see a makeshift barricade ahead, formed from hastily sawn off lengths of pipe. A military-grade autocannon was mounted on a tripod behind it, two turncoat Gyrish soldiers just slotting a fresh magazine into the smoking weapon. They looked up in panic at his pounding footsteps, and Hastor hit the barricade without slowing, one shoulder lowered. The impact jarred through him, and something broke inside his chest, but the heretics fared far worse. Their cannon crashed over and was buried in heavy lengths of metal. One of the traitors was hit in the face by a flying pipe and went down without a sound, while the other let out a shrill scream as a heavy section of pipe landed on his legs and crushed them into the ground. Hastor stepped through the wreckage and laid his blade at the point of the man's throat. According to his auto-senses, the shrine was dead ahead, just around the next corner.
"What lies in wait?" he asked. "Speak, and I'll make it swift."
Despite his obvious agony, the cultist just stared up at Hastor with hate-filled eyes.
"Slow it is, then," said Hastor,
treading very deliberately on one of the man's arms and grinding the bones beneath his armoured boot as he stepped over him. The cultist gave a scream through gritted teeth, and the champion moved on. Mindful of the fight at the intersection, he leaned carefully around the corner to see the shrine dead ahead. It was a blocky, single-story ferrocrete cube with a Mechanicus cog embossed on its flank and a metal door that hung open, torn half off its hinges. Figures moved within, and Hastor's superior autosensors detected pulsing power signatures. Idaras gave a sudden grunt of pain, and Hastor spun to see the big intercessor stagger. There was a ragged hole in his chest, the exit wound of a fragmentation round. Idaras blinked at Hastor in surprise, tried to turn, and another shot went in through his jaw and blew out the back of his skull. Hastor cursed as a spry figure prowled through the veil of steam, ragged cloak billowing around him, pistol smoking.
"Shen," he snarled, the rumble of his vox turning the name into a curse.
The three-armed gunman tipped him a mocking nod, then raised all three guns and let fly, stepping back into the steam as he did. Hastor spun his blade, smashing bullets out of the air as he stormed forward. One shot clipped his thigh, another punched solidly through his shoulder and erupted out of his back, staggering him and causing him to cough blood into his faceplate. Hastor was amidst the steam, and if his enemy had hoped it would conceal him, he was to be sorely disappointed. The champion's autosensors showed him precisely where Shen was, and allowed him to aim a vicious cut at the gunman, even as more bullets pinged and whined from his armour. Shen read the blow's trajectory and dove forward, rolling under the attack and past Hastor, before coming back up in a whirl of cloak and pistol barrels. Another shot cratered Hastor's chestplate, and the champion cursed as he realised Shen was just keeping him busy, occupied as far from the shrine as possible. It was working, though, he thought. Dueling the three-armed gunman was like fighting a whirlwind, bullets whipping towards him in a constant stream as the cult's hero dove, rolled and ducked around Hastor's blade amidst the roiling steam. Hastor managed to rip the tip of his blade through Shen's ribs and drew a spray of ichor, but in return, a volley of shots rang his helm like a bell and tore a bloody furrow along the side of his neck. Finesse was not going to win this battle, Hastor realised. Fresh, unwounded, he could have revelled in the strange duel before slaying his enemy gloriously in the Emperor's name. But wounded, possibly dying and very certainly running out of time, matters were sorely different. Leaving his guard open for a few desperate seconds, Hastor whipped his blade through the pipes that stretched overhead, and fresh blasts of steam filled the narrow alleyway. Bullets rattled from his armour, and external temperature warnings chimed in his helm. But then Shen was reeling, dragging his cloak over his face and darting back towards the shrine as the steam scalded his bare flesh. Hastor raised his plasma pistol, beseeching it to fire with the greatest possible bellicosity, before pulling the trigger. A furious plasma blast ripped from its barrel, the weapon's housing heating so fast that it burned his palm right through his gauntlet. Hastor dropped the weapon with a curse, but saw in that instant that it had done its duty. The plasma blast ripped past Shen and hit the flank of a coolant tower. The explosion hurled molten metal and liquid coolant in all directions, and, already blinded by steam, the three-armed gunman staggered back with a cry of shock as he was scalded and burned. Hastor struck, one-handed, inelegant but lethally effective. His blade plunged into Shen's back and exploded through the gunman's chest, drenched in purple gore. Hastor ripped the weapon free, and his enemy dropped to his hands and knees before slumping to the ground in a spreading pool of ichor. Ears ringing, lips wet with his own blood, body one huge scream of pain, Elrich Hastor limped along the final alleyway and plunged into the shrine. Inside, he had a fleeting impression of shadowy figures hunched over a complex array of detonators. Then his blade flashed, and Xeno cultists fell dead, their gore drenching the bomb they had been building. One acolyte spun and raised a pistol, but Hastor swatted it away, almost contemptuously, before striking the creature's head from its neck. The last cultist crumpled, neck stump jetting vital fluids, and Hastor followed it down to the floor. He clanged to his knees beside the cultist's bomb, then toppled onto his side, his blade spilling from his hand.
Dawn, forgive my errors. Let this be penance enough,
he muttered again and again, feeling his lifeblood running out onto the stone floor. Seeing in his mind's eye the Van Sappen warehouse collapsing, his brothers torn apart by the blast, until at last darkness took him. Primus Law stood over the fallen bodies of the oppressors and watched as his brothers and sisters prepared the biopurge bomb for activation. They didn't know the proper sanctification rituals, but that hardly mattered, when those were offered only to a false deity of cogs and gears. Father had explained to Lore and his brood how the bomb's spirits could be awoken without all the technical mumbo-jumbo that the Adeptus Mechanicus insisted was so holy. Just another mechanism for keeping the people down, he thought bitterly. How sad that it took selfless acts like this to throw off the shackles of the masses. Still, he was honoured to be Father's instrument, and he would see them all again when the ascension was complete. The shrine was cavernous, containing dozens of substations and ritual chambers. Sister Meshlin had laboured there as a decontamination serf, however, and she knew the route to the primary ventilation shrine. She had died at the hands of the enemy, as had all but a last handful of the blessed. But their sacrifices had seen the hated oppressors cut down, the Gyrish guards slain, and the way to the shrine laid open. A few Gyrish hung on, driven back to the outer service corridor, trying their best to storm back in and stop him. Law knew they would fail. They would not get past the last of the blessed, not in this divine hour. And besides, they would be too late even if they did. A brood brother turned to him and gestured at the heavy metal case they had wired into the primary ventilation hub. He could hear air whooshing through the massive pipes, turbines turning within, as they drew it down fresh from the towers of Hive Spire and funneled it into the rest of the Hive districts with incredible force and speed. It was a system of inequality, just like everything else on Gaia, he thought with disgust. The upper districts received fresh, comparatively clean air. By the time it reached the laboratus, it was polluted, third hand, barely oxygenated enough to sustain life, and all too quick to trigger myriad respiratory diseases in young, old, and infirm alike. And yet they had not risen to the cult's call, these willing dupes of Angelicus. They had faltered in fear, forsaken Father's message, thrown in their terrified, short-sighted lot with the oppressors. Well, now all the ventilation fans were dialed up to their highest setting, and all it would take was a press of the lurid green rune in the centre of the purge bomb's panel to send the contaminant funnelling out through every duct and airway of the city. Hive Spire, Commercias, Militarum, Laboratus. Every district would be flooded with biopurge gases within minutes. Every last living thing in the hive would die, from the lowliest sump scum to the high and mighty governor herself, and all would become one in the beautiful light of ascension. He was setting them free, even those who had done nothing to deserve such a boon, and with the same blow, he would reduce the last loyalist stronghold on the planet to a hollow tomb. With no armoured city to retreat within, whatever forces the enemy had left in the field would surely be hunted down and torn apart piece by piece by the masses who rose in the wake of the oppressor governor's fall. That was Father's will, thought Law, and he would see it done. The door to the upper gallery blew in with a muffled bang, and a vox-amplified roar of fury rang through the shrine. Lore's head snapped up as enforcers stormed through the door behind the hulking figure of a skull-helmed Imperial Fist in black and yellow armor.
"Too late," he breathed,
and slammed his fist against the rune. Storn saw the figures clustered around the shrine one level down, saw their three-armed leader raise one hand and depress the rune of awakening on the bomb's casing. A high-pitched whine filled the air as micro-atomizers went to work within the deadly device, and a lurid green sludge began to funnel through the pipes that connected it to the hive's primary ventilator. Almost at once, thin green gases billowed from the ducts throughout the shrine, and the enforcers staggered and choked as they were engulfed.
In the Emperor's name, no!
Roared Storn. He swept his Crozius through the handrail of the walkway to clear his path, took two steps back, and then leapt from the walkway with a bellow of fury. Already, he could see warning runes flashing crimson in his peripheral vision, as the gases ate away at the seals of his armour and filtered through rents where he had been wounded. Even as his boots hit the metal deck plates of the ventilator shrine, he heard the enforcers behind him screaming and gurgling in terror as they died.
Throne, he thought in dismay. It works so damn fast.
He heard Verrill give a wail of pure horror and couldn't help but shoot a glance back to see her slumped body against the railing, her skin bubbling and slothing from her bones. He felt sorrow and anger that he had led them to their deaths. Red tinged the edges of his vision, and he realized the same thing was moments away from happening to him. There was no way to live through this, Storn realized. But perhaps he could still do his duty. Turning back, he saw that the handful of cultists around the primary shrine were doing no better than the luckless enforcers. They staggered and collapsed, gurgling prayers to their heretical deities as their eyeballs ran to jelly in their sockets and foaming vomit spilled over their disintegrating lips. Storn barreled towards the shrine, feeling his gorge rise and his flesh sear as the gas ate away at him. If he could strike the bomb with his Crozius, perhaps he could destroy it. He had no idea what sort of spread the contaminant would achieve, if it was all released here in its raw form, but it couldn't be as bad as the ventilation system carrying it as a gas to every living being in Hive Angelicus. Could it? He swung back his Crozius, feeling bone growing brittle and muscle separating, threatening to spill the weapon from his hand. Then something reared up before him, a ghastly apparition of bubbling flesh and stark white bone that wore a tattering greatcoat and clutched at him with three crumbling arms. Storn reeled, his body on fire with agony, revolted at the feeling of dissolution racing through his flesh. Through a sheet of crimson, he saw the rotting thing clutch feebly at him. Surely it should have already been dead. Yet, with its last strength, it was wrestling against him, holding him back from the bomb. Then he locked gazes with its one remaining eye, saw the fathomless hatred and cold predatory intellect there, as he had seen it in the eyes of the gene stealers, and he understood. Whatever this being had been, now it was but a meat puppet for Father. One last weapon to fling at him that the cult's plan might succeed. The thought sent a last surge of anger and hatred rushing through Storn. Even as his flesh bubbled and ran like hot mud, even as his bones splintered and his eyes burst and the gruesome flesh puppet raked at him with its talons, he let that fury lend him the strength for one last swing of his Crozius. The weapon's crackling head slammed into the biopurge bomb, blowing it apart in a spray of acid green fluids. And Chaplain Storn knew nothing more. Chapter 13. Shattered glass fell like bladed rain as the stained glass ceiling of the Fane of the Emperor Risen burst apart from explosive overpressure. Shards smashed against Lydaran's armour as he strode through a hail of autogun fire, geokinetic energies crackling around him in an ionised hurricane. Raging firestorms blazed through the crypts and mourners' pews to his right and left. Sparks and rolling smoke filled the air, cut with whirls and streaks where bullets and bolts ripped back and forth. Echoing gunfire filled the world with thunder that made the librarian's organs feel as though they were shuddering in his body. Lydaran's boots crunched upon bones and glass as he advanced into the heart of the crypt sacrosanctal, directly into the teeth of the cult's last defensive position. Imperial fists followed him in. They threaded between the crypt's thick stone columns as they directed perfectly drilled hails of fire into their desperate foes. The cultists' mutant features could be glimpsed through the smoke, bobbing up from behind a sturdy barricade of pews, statuary, and smashed stonework they had thrown up across the southern entrance to the Mausoleum Eternal. The first ever governor of Gaia, Matthias Dovasil, lay in state somewhere beyond the barricade, preserved for posterity within a shimmering stasis field. At least he had done before the fall of Hive Claritos. Lydaran doubted they would find the patriarch of the Gairish nobility left unmolested by the insurgents. But then, Dovasil wasn't the father Lydaran had come to find.
"Squad Casmus, suppress them!"
he voxed, and a pip of confirmation flashed back to him. 50 yards to the rear, the devastators of Squad Casmus raised their weapons and sent a quartet of missiles roaring down from the crypt steps to smash into the cultists' barricade. 4 fragmentation warheads burst in perfect concert, fired by warriors well used to clearing the fire steps of enemy fortifications. Shrapnel filled the air, and wherever it bit home into mutant flesh, sprays of blood and torn meat erupted. Lydaran drew deep upon the wellspring of the warp, feeling his psychocircuitry heat as the pressure of that power grew until he felt as though he were holding back a thundering avalanche with his mind. He roared and slammed the base of his forestaff into the flagstones of the crypt, channeling and releasing the apocalyptic mass of energy in an almighty pulse. A geokinetic shockwave tore through the floor, flagstones blasting skyward as the energies raced through them. The shockwave hit the cult barricade and blew it apart, as though a giant had ripped its fist up through its middle. Shattered stone and broken bodies flew upwards and met the still-falling blizzard of glass. The entire structure shuddered. Cracks spidered through walls and floor. The enemy's gunfire cut off, as though a tap had been turned, and as chunks of stone, wood and metal crashed down throughout the crypt, Lydran's warriors faltered, given pause by the sheer destructive fury their leader had unleashed.
"Fist! What in the old father's name was that?"
came Red Fang's voice over the vox.
"Thought the place was about to come down on our heads. You know you don't shell a place when you got your own men in it, yes? No shelling, psychic siegecraft only," replied Lydran, flashing hand signals at his warriors and sending them prowling forward through the billowing dust and smoke.
Red Fang was silent for a beat before he replied, and Lydran heard a note of wary respect in the Fenrisian's voice when he did.
"That was you. It has been a long and frustrating war," replied Lydran. "I am hastening its end."
Red Fang grunted in response, then cut the link. The librarian frowned behind his faceplate. He had expected Red Fang to return some arrogant rejoinder about being the one to have brought matters to a swift end, and the fact that the Space Wolf had not done so deepened Lydran's feeling of concern. Was father here? They had met resistance, certainly, the cult unleashing mutant monsters, triggering hidden munitions, and throwing themselves into suicidal charges as the Imperial fists pushed in through the lower crypts, and the Death Watch advanced through the shrine's high galleries to meet them at the structure's heart. Yet, their numbers and munitions had proven little challenge for the might of the Adeptus Astartes, who had had to fight harder for Delvemine than for Claritos Hive. Even High Marshal Callistus's regiments were making swift and certain progress, and their casualties had been moderate at most. It was hardly the furious and final defence of an insect queen in its hive, he thought. Had the Imperial Fists really been so overcautious? The enemy truly so weak, once their smoke and mirrors were torn away? Lydran hoped that was the case, but his and Ancient Tarsan's conversation kept replaying in his mind.
Perhaps they have massed their elite fighters around the nest itself. Or perhaps Redfang is wrong, and the brood nest is not here at all.
If that was the case, then the Imperial forces had still crushed an enemy fortress, he told himself. It would still be a show of Imperial strength fit to cow the less committed of the cult's followers, and it left one less enemy stronghold for the writhing worm to operate out of. Yet still, Lydran's unease grew. If their false deity was not lurking in the chambers ahead, then where was it? And what heresy might it be working while their overwhelming strength was directed here? Lydran realized that he had fallen to the rear of the Imperial Fist's advance, standing in brooding contemplation amidst the drifting dust and smoke as his warriors filtered past. Up ahead, the sounds of gunfire echoed afresh from within the crypt sacrosanctal. He could hear Tarsan's voice, echoing as he bellowed oaths of loyalty and courage, and more distantly, a feral howling that could only be Watch Captain Redfang directing his own warriors into the fray.
Fight now, questions later,
Lydran told himself, and strode through the wreckage of the enemy barricade into the heart of the fane of the Emperor Risen. They found the remains of First Governor Dovasil strung up from a crude industrial worm form at the heart of his mausoleum. Taken back into time's corrosive embrace, the body had rotted and now hung as the abused and spoiled centrepiece of a sprawling xenocult shrine. It was here that the enemy staged their last-ditch defence, and here they died. By the time Lydran joined the fight, his warriors had hit the cultists from one side, while Redfang and his black-armoured Death Watch struck furiously from the other. Bolters boomed, the Death Watch weapons loosing specially selected shells whose reserves of bio-acids sprayed the tight-packed cultists as they burst amongst them. Flamer blasts turned clusters of cultists into reeling torches. Lydran saw figures in magisterial robes, brandishing industrial-fabricated worm icons, screaming exhortations at their deformed followers, who in turn howled their heartfelt hatred as they took shots at the encircling space marines. Lydran saw a tall, three-armed woman in elaborate robes charge at Redfang, wielding a pair of energized picks and an auto-pistol. The Watch Captain swayed easily around one swinging pick, caught the other on the churning teeth of his chainsword, then pistoned his free hand forward and crushed the cult leader's skull. Her body cartwheeled backwards from the force of the blow and ploughed into the heaped devotional offerings around the base of the worm form icon. Her fall was met by wails of dismay and fury from the last few cultists, but by now their anger was all but impotent. They were surrounded, denuded of cover, plan, or hope, trapped within a closing ring of power-armoured warriors who quickly stamped out the last remnants of resistance.
"Keep some alive!" ordered Lydran,
and within moments, several of the remaining cultists had been roughly disarmed and restrained by Imperial Fists. The captives struggled and cursed, but stood little hope of escaping the Space Marine's iron-clad grip. Lydran tore off his helmet and maglocked it to his belt, then approached the nearest captive, who was being held in place by Intercessor Sergeant Eulatus. Lydran loomed over the cultist, noting his yellow eyes and black slit pupils, the mauve cast to his flesh, and the bony ridges that marched up from his nose across his bulbous scalp. The man's face was daubed with smudged coal and gold paint that Lydran presumed marked him out as some form of senior figure. He glared up at Lydran, shaking, not with fear, the librarian realized, but with anger and hatred.
"Murdering bastards!"
spat the cultist, his voice hoarse with emotion and smoke inhalation.
"Look at what you've done! These people wanted freedom from your oppression! They wanted ascension, that was all! And you have the nerve to call us monsters.
His fanged maw mangled the words, but they were recognisable enough. Lydran felt little inclination towards subtlety. He reached out a hand, and with a gesture and a pulse of psychokinetic force, he snapped the neck of another of the captives. The man's yellow eyes bulged, and he drew in a ragged breath to begin ranting again.
"Your lives are worthless to me," said Lydran,
before he could.
"I will kill your comrades just to get your attention. Do you understand?"
The cultist stared up at him, eyes burning.
"Don't tell him anything, Isaac,"
urged another of the cultists, fighting against the intercessor who held her by both arms in an inescapable grip.
"Let them kill us. You know where we're going. What awaits?"
Lydran shot a meaningful glance towards Redfang, who was pacing from one fallen cultist to the next, using his armoured boot to crush the life from any who still twitched.
"I shall make your death quick," the librarian said. "He will not. So tell me, where is Father?"
The cultist leader blinked in evident surprise. Then he began to laugh, a snarling and mangled sound.
"Look into my eyes, oppressor," he said with a leer. "Father is there. Father is everywhere. Father is in all of us, and he is everywhere. His whispers herald the coming of the Star Children, just as—"
Lydran grabbed the man's jaw and squeezed, cutting off his laughter amidst the crunch and grind of stressed bone.
"Spare me your heresy, scum," he growled. "Where is Father?"
"I don't know,"
slurred the cultist, his eyes still bright with triumph.
"Father awaits ascension in his holy sepulchre. It isn't here."
Lydran didn't need empathic powers to hear the simple truth in the man's words. The cultist's glee was too evident to ignore. The librarian took a slow breath, then nodded once. There came the crunch of bone as several necks were snapped as one, and the remains of the cultist captives slumped to the blooded floor. The librarian closed his eyes, marshalling his emotions before looking up at Watch Captain Redfang. The Fenrisian was exchanging quiet words with Apothecary Sorkal, the tall blood angel that had manhandled Bishop Renwick so casually, and several other warriors from a spread of chapters. None of Dawn's Gene Sons were amongst them, Lydran noted, and wondered if that was deliberate.
"There is no clash of loyalties there," he thought.
"Watch Captain Redfang. Father is not here, and it seems he never was," said Lydran, the haft of his stave rapping against the stone floor as he approached the Death Watch. He was conscious of ancient Tarsen and a number of yellow-armoured battle brothers massing at his back. Redfang ignored Lydran, though the warriors he was speaking to glanced towards the librarian. Lydran saw something in Apothecary Sorkal's eyes, perhaps warning. The white scar gave the slightest shake of his head, but it only served to harden Lydran's resolve.
"Watch Captain Redfang. Perhaps the gunfire has rendered you temporarily deaf," said Lydran, placing a hand on Redfang's shoulder guard to turn him.
The Space Wolf growled and shook Lydran's hand off, turning with his lips skinned back from his canines.
"Please, keep wasting my time stating the obvious, Fist," he growled, and his eyes flashed with anger. "You told us you were sure," said Lydran.
"You brutalized and intimidated the Governor's conclave, interrupted our operations in Hive Angelicus, spent lives and material on this fruitless assault. And for what?"
"I don't answer to the Imperial Fists,"
spat Redfang, turning fully so that his chest plate met Lydran's with a clang. The librarian stood firm, jaw set, refusing to be cowed by the waves of feral aggression that radiated from the Fenrisian.
"You answer to the Imperium, to Segmentum Command," he replied, with implacable calm.
The assault was wasteful. It makes me wonder how much of your apparent certainty is naught but guesswork. Is Father real, or simply some heretical construct? Is there really such a pressing need for haste, I wonder? Or did you simply say what you needed to in order to force our compliance with your reckless way of war?
You step too far, Brother Librarian, said Sorkel with a scowl. The Death Watch know much about many Xenos threats. We bear the burden of greater knowledge than any sane servant of the Emperor would wish to possess, and we understand the danger better than any. Father is not here, but he is out there, and every day he lives brings the Tyranids closer.
So why don't you go hide behind your fortress walls and leave the hunt to those with some instincts? Snapped Red Fang. We would better serve the Imperium if we fought together rather than separately, said Lydran,
the Watch Captain's scorn triggering nothing more in him than a weary disappointment.
We would better serve the Imperium without your second-guessing, or the clans of this world dragging at our heels,
Red Fang replied, then turned away.
We'll tell you if we need a wall knocking down.
With that, Lothar Redfang stalked out of the crypt with his battle brothers close on his heels. Lydran looked around the bolt-riddled chamber, took in the dangling ruin of the first governor, the blasted stonewalk, and ruined frescoes that had once made this a place of pilgrimage from all over Gaia and beyond. He had a momentary premonition of the entire planet reduced to such a corpse-choked tangle of ruins, and shook his head. Was this what victory looked like to the Death Watch? The Xenos threat slaughtered to the last, but the rest of Gaia dragged into the flames along with them?
Come, brothers,
he said, realizing that his warriors were watching him with stoic patience, awaiting his order.
We regroup at Hive Angelicus. I have need of Chaplain Storn's counsel before we make our next move.
Lydran led his warriors out of the ruins of the Fane of the Emperor Risen and upwards through the gutted hive. They passed blazing heaps of corpses, sundered cultist barricades, and triumphant bands of Gairish soldiery laying siege to the last enemy enclaves. The Imperial Fists made for whatever remained of the Hive's Orbitus district, intending to call in their gunships and lift off from one of its suborbital landing pads. 3 levels below Orbitus, external Vox signals finally found them through the soup of energy discharge, atmospheric interference and swirling electrogeists thrown up by the battle. Lydran received Shipmaster Gavorn's hail first with surprise, and then, as he listened, with dawning horror. And then at last, with anger. The Orbiters had come through the battle for Claritos remarkably unscathed. Major landing and refueling sites were so valuable upon Gaia's jungle-choked continent that both the cult and the Gairish alike had sought to preserve its facilities for their own use. And so the Orbiters had remained, jutting from the Hive's flank like some vast metallic plateau. Swarms of Imperial aircraft came and went from it, thousands of Gairish soldiery and dropped-in ground crews bustling here and there as platforms and facilities were checked for concealed booby traps, aircraft were refueled and rearmed, cult prisoners were executed by firing squad, and regimental preachers blessed those Gairish who had made it through the fighting as well as the neatly lined-up bodies of those who had not.
Red Fang!
Roared Lydran, as he stormed through the midst of the hubbub. Gairish soldiers flinched at his furious shout, watching with wide eyes as he passed. Ahead, up on a ferrocrete landing platform, the Watch Captain and his comrades had been about to board one of their sleek Corvus dropships. The Fenrisian turned, and one look at his hard expression told Lydran he had also heard the news from Angelicus. Sorkal started forward, intending to intercept Lydran, and the Imperial Fists marching behind him. But Red Fang raised a hand and waved his comrade back.
I told you to leave us to our hunt, Fist, said Red Fang,
and Lydran felt fresh rage beating at his temples.
You drew us away,
he shouted, jabbing a finger into Red Fang's chest with a dull clang. Even as he did so, a part of him knew that he had been complicit in that action, that he hadn't deigned to work with the Space Wolf, and so had allowed this to happen. Yet he was too angry. All the unbending pride of his genetic heritage rushing to the fore as his collar took hold.
You left the fortress all but undefended, and worse, you dishonored us all by convincing us to do the same. Look at what it has cost us all.
Lydra knew that more and more Gyrish were gathering, staring uneasily at this furious exchange between the Emperor's legendary angels. They couldn't know about the attack on Hive Angelicus yet, he thought, or they would not have looked so confused, so alarmed. Hearing it like this could be disastrous for the Gyrish morale, yet he simply couldn't hold his fury and frustration in check any longer. His sorrow at the loss of yet more brothers, and his shame at being outmaneuvered by the insurgents yet again, mingled with his frustration at Red Fang's unwillingness to listen, to work with the Imperial Fists, or take any note of their counsel. It all mixed together into a seething storm that he could no longer hold in.
War costs lives, said Red Fang. We bleed, they bleed. There will be time for wailing and rending garments later, Fist. You dare mock at this time, spat Lydran. Angelica's hive spire is gone, and half the upper districts are in quarantine lockdown. Hundreds of thousands are dead, and from what I hear, it was very nearly millions. 18 loyal Imperial Fists are dead. Nearly a quarter of a damned company, along with one of the greatest warriors I've ever known. And the few of my battle brothers who made it out aboard shuttles are walking wounded who may never fight again. The governor is missing, presumed dead. Her conclave missing, presumed dead. The heads of the Gyrish Ecclesiarchy, Administratum, Munitorum, Arbites, all missing, presumed dead. It's a throne-cursed disaster, Watch Captain. And it is entirely of your making!
Red Fang bristled, his hand jerking towards the pommel of his chainsword before he stopped himself. Lydran saw the motion and spat in disgust, ignoring the murmurs of shock and alarm that rippled out through the watching Gyrish.
Look at you, half feral, ill-disciplined, without even the self-control to take an accusation without reaching for your blade. I do not know how the Death Watch select their officers, but if you are their exemplar, then I am glad never to have served amongst their ranks. You prat of what you know nothing, snarled Red Fang,
placing one open palm on Lydran's chestplate and pushing him backwards a step, as though to dismiss him. Lydran slapped Red Fang's hand away and squared up to the Fenrisian again with a flare of unthinking fury.
I know that you have thrown away Imperial lives for nothing, he said. And now you are too much of a coward even to give account for them. What will you do next, Watch Captain? Shipmaster Gavorn told me of your order that he ready his ship's weaponry for target planetary bombardment. When will it be too much, Wolf?
Red Fang snarled, a low guttural sound full of barely restrained aggression.
What would a Primaris mind witch know of this war or its stakes? He growled,
pushing Lydran again, harder.
While you were sleeping under the Martian sands, we were fighting for this galaxy, losing brothers and worlds, and making bloody sacrifices we could ill afford. I've buried warriors finer than you, or any of your plodding Dorn sons will ever be, and still the Allfather demands more of us. More? Will you burn the entire world to purge the Xeno cult? Slaughter all these loyal soldiers along with their planet in your mindless charge towards victory at any cost? Slaughter them as surely as you slaughtered Storn and the Governor and all the rest of them?
Asked Lydran, and the anger in him suddenly guttered at the awful, haunted expression that flashed across Red Fang's features, there and gone. It was replaced by cold, hard rage.
I will kill every living thing on this world with fire from the skies if I must, he said,
and his eyes were chips of Fenrisian ice.
To stop them before they reach the segmentum solar, the throne world, to extinguish their beacon, I would do it in a heartbeat. That is what the Death Watch needs in its officer's fist. That is why I will never, ever see the Fang rising proud over Fenris again. My ship will not fire upon your orders, and my brothers will not permit such a cull, said Lydaran, and his words rang like a hammer on anvil. I will not permit it. Transforming Gaia into a lifeless wasteland would make us no better than the monsters you claim to hate. Lydaran saw the blow coming a split second too late. The Fenrisian moved with a liquid speed that belied his hulking frame, and his armored fist crashed into Lydaran's nose, hard enough to mash it across the librarian's face in a spray of blood. Gasps and cries of dismay rang out all around as Lydaran staggered back and was caught and held up by several of his battle brothers. His pride burned at the insult of the blow, and the faces of his dead comrades flashed before his mind's eye as he surged back at Red Fang, aiming a punch with his free hand that the Fenrisian half-dodged. It clipped Red Fang's ear, and Lydaran's armored knuckles tore away a chunk of flesh and gristle. Red Fang howled his fury and launched himself at Lydaran, grabbing the librarian's shoulder guards in a vice-like grip. Red Fang's forehead slammed into Lydaran's face, and this time the pain was such that Lydaran's vision grayed at the edges for a moment. He rocked back in the watch captain's grasp, and his force staff left his grip as his fingers momentarily loosened. Lydaran tasted blood and realized that Red Fang was rearing back for another savage headbutt. Before it could connect, he brought up an armored knee and slammed it crosswise into Red Fang's inner thigh, hard enough to dent the plate there. The Fenrisian jerked instinctively away, and as his grip loosened, Lydaran threw off Red Fang's hands and hammered three swift body blows into the Space Wolf's chest. The punches rang like bells as armor struck armor and drove Red Fang back far enough to give Lydaran a moment's breathing space.
Enough!
Snapped Lydaran, spitting a mouthful of blood and motioning.